Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. This is the second episode of my Just Friggin' Do It series, which I started in April. So I'm committed to 12 of these. I'll be airing one Just Friggin' Do It episode a month, one on the first Friday of the month. So this is number two. And just for a warning, I think this might be a bit long for an episode. So you might want to listen to it in two parts. I'm just going to keep it in one episode. But yeah, I want to go over, you will probably learn more about me than if you've been a listener for a while, you probably know me pretty good. But for this one, I need to go into a bit of my backstory for you to understand this episode and for it to make sense, I think. And this is something, and that's why I'm doing this Just Friggin' Do It series, is because I want to be an example of you knowing that something that you've been thinking about doing for maybe a long time, something that might be scary, something that might be a little out of the ordinary, you can just friggin' do it. So if I can do it, then you can do it. And so this episode won't be for everybody. It's a little woo-woo. So we go into a little bit of spiritual, like magical, mystical stuff. And I know that some people have religious beliefs that might be in opposition to this. But that's one of the reasons why I want to give you a little backstory about me. And what I would ask you to do is to just be open. And what I find is sometimes people, and I've known these people in my life before, who are very ingrained in their religious upbringing or beliefs, they are very judgmental. And what I think God wants, why do we have all these religions in the world? I think God wants us all to at the bottom line, be good people, be kind people, be non-judgmental people, be loving people. And why would everybody have different beliefs if only one religion is the true religion? Doesn't really make sense, does it? So anyways, that's what I believe. So if you are really rooted in your beliefs and you're not open to other ideas, opinions, learning things, then this probably isn't an episode for you. So, but I do want to explain my religious upbringing because this will help you understand where I've come and what has led me to where I am. Maybe you'll get that. Sometimes we don't even know. We just, it just kind of evolves to what we are and we just have to accept it, right? So I've had a lot of spiritual growth over the past 3 years. I say spiritual versus religious because I don't go to church. I don't feel like I need to go to church. I actually know people who go to church and they are less spiritual than me. So I don't think going to church actually says anything about how spiritual you are. So I have been curious, let me say that. And I will say it's kind of odd that I think I started to get like spiritual from Oprah, which sounds kind of crazy, but Oprah was a true teacher to me. I religiously watched her show. I got introduced to a lot of concepts. I got introduced to a lot of interesting books. I got introduced to Eckhart Tolle,
I did a webinar back in before webinars were a thing. And we met on Monday nights, and it was Eckhart and Oprah and her viewers. And we would do, we logged onto the computer and we did, it was a 10 week, book club essentially for his book. It wasn't The Power of Now. It was the I'll put it in the show notes. I'll link to it, but it escapes me right now. It will probably come to me in a bit, but a new world is what it is. And in his books, I will say Eckhart Tolle's are almost like books that you need a book club with, because they're kind of like, I was so glad to have Oprah to kind of translate it, because it's kind of out there. And Eckhart is a very, he is a very interesting person, very interesting life, where he was going to commit suicide. He's got an interesting backstory, where he was kind of like at the rock bottom. And then he had this like kind of hallelujah moment, if you will. And yeah, he's just really a very peaceful man, and he knows a lot. And so I really would say that it kind of started, I guess, with Oprah, but I didn't really have any other spiritual teachers until I started listening to my coach's podcast. And just for reference purposes, my coach is James Wedmore. And he had, because it was at the point where I was looking to start my own business. And he teaches people how to start their own businesses. And so I started listening to his podcast. His podcast is called Mind Your Business, Mind Your Business. And so it's kind of like a play on words, because it's all about kind of using the power of the mind to have a successful business. Because honestly, to have a successful business, you really have to be, you have to have help, not only in actually human help, but spiritual help. You have to, you know, the universe can help you. And why not use that as a means to, you know, grow, learn, expand, and really get nudges, get, you know, I've got a lot of guidance from things that I can't even explain. And for most of my life, I was very ignorant to all this. Most of my life, I just walked around in kind of like a zombie, if you will. I didn't know that I had access to my higher self. I didn't know I had access to God and angels, and that I had this whole army, invisible army, working for me. And wanting what I wanted, which honestly, I didn't even really know what I wanted. I just was kind of like operating from a point at which I thought I needed to operate, which was to make money and get, you know, climb the corporate ladder, which, you know, really wasn't following my heart. So that is my spiritual growth really over the last 3 years, from finding my coach and following him, his podcasts, his, you know, lots of retreats, and lots of training, lots of books. I've become certified as a neuro coach. I have a second certification as a Sparkotype advisor. I wouldn't say that's necessarily spiritual. It's more just, you know, book learning. But yes, I have done lots and read books that align with things that are more spiritual in nature. And so really, really helped me, you know, kind of become the person I am today, who is so open and so much believes that everybody, we all come from the same source, that we are all born limitless, and that we then become humans that become riddled with our life experience that comes with a lot of burdens, that comes with a lot of, you know, in some cases trauma, in some case just regular normal living. And the way we experience the world, we develop beliefs, and these beliefs can limit us in our potential. That's just the human nature and the human way. So I did not have religious upbringing. I was baptized a Methodist, but when I was very young, we had what I would call a bad experience with a religious zealot. And that created a wedge in my family. And so without going into detail, it created a wedge where, and my parents ended up really turning away from religion, because when I was very small, we did go to Sunday school. I don't think we went very frequently. I think we were infrequent, but I do remember going to like chorus, in our church. I remember we had a church that we went to, and I remember like being dressed up. There's pictures of us on Easter Sunday going to church, but I was very, very young, 5 or 6 years old, probably. And we stopped going to church, and we kind of, decoupled from religious, any discussion of religion. And so, that was kind of what happened. And then when I got to high school, I started dating a Mormon. So he was my boyfriend for 2 years, and I didn't go to church. He went to church. So I started going to church with him. So I knew more about the Mormon religion than I did about any other religion. I actually went out and visited him in Provo, Utah. He went to BYU. So I was very familiar with, I would go to church every Sunday with his family, when for the time that, he wasn't away at school and college. He was a year older than me. So like my junior year of high school, I pretty much spent going to, church with his family. And then he left. And, so I didn't go to church, but yes, I spent a lot of time, going to Mormon services. And so, yeah, so I feel like I kind of developed, I'm very much a self-taught, learned, individual in terms of my, training, or I don't even call it training, my understanding. And, you know, everybody, I so celebrate everybody having their own beliefs and their own individual feelings about things. So I'm not thinking like everybody should like believe what I believe, but I will say that having had my podcast in particular, and my coach who's recommended lots of fascinating books, and through the different business mentorships that I've been in, I've met some super interesting people, and I've interviewed, and I will recommend a couple of episodes from my past episodes that you can tune into, to kind of like give you a little bit more flavor, of stuff that I've witnessed, I guess, or experienced through learning about people. So for example, one of my older episodes, was somebody who speaks, she doesn't channel. She never said she channels, but she writes and can connect with people who are either in a coma or dead. And she wrote a book, and she had the person that she, connected with, her husband. So the wife, who experienced this connection with her husband who died, they wrote the book together, and it was all about this connecting experience. Incredible, incredible. I also read a really good book, by a hypnotist, and it was called, and I've mentioned it before, but it's called, Journey of, it's called the, Journey of Souls, Life Between Lives. Journey of Souls, I think is what it's called. So again, I'll reference the stuff in the show notes. So that being said, I wanted to put that out there. So I also want to talk about my mom. So let me just tell you before I start talking anymore about backstory stuff. About a year ago, I started having this strong nudge. I don't know where it came from or why it cropped up, probably from doing that podcast interview, reading the book I read, although I read the book a couple of years ago, but I started to really want to connect with my father, who died in 2007. So, and some of the reason I wanted to connect with my father is because of my mother's situation. And so I'll go into the situation with my mother. But I've been having this nudge to connect with my father, and I haven't taken any action on it. First of all, you need somebody to help you with that connection. You need some sort of medium. And oh, by the way, I just discovered Tyler Henry on Netflix. So if you want to watch a medium in action, that's a great series to tune into. He looks like Macaulay Culkin. He's pretty young. I think he's still in his 20s, but what he can do is pretty friggin' amazing. But anyways, I needed a medium. And the person, Catherine Weisenberg, who had done the interview that I had done on her book, she actually said, I didn't even ask her, but she said during our interview that she didn't do this anymore. She doesn't do this. So I didn't even approach her on it. But I think that whole interview got me starting to think about connecting with my dad. And my dad died very suddenly. So there was no like goodbye or, you know, no discussion, no chance to tell him I loved him, even though, you know, I knew he loved me and I loved him before he died. But it was very sudden and very difficult for me and for my mother. So that's what this is about. This is about me just friggin' doing it and connecting with my dead dad. Crazy, crazy. Cue creepy music. So maybe I need my editor to find some. So yes, that is what this episode is about, that I finally found someone. And even after I found someone, I still waited to actually take the step to make the appointment and do the connecting. So I wanted to give a little bit of a backstory about my mom and why it was so important for me to have this connection happen. It was really for my mom than for me. If my mom wasn't in the picture, I don't think I would have connected or tried to connect with my dad. So my mom, the backstory with my mom is that my mom was a big influence in my life. And my mom and my dad had a love story. They eloped. They loved each other so much. They dated for 5 months, got married, had kids young. I was the second of two girls. But my mom was always super positive and super high energy. And she taught me so much about always looking at the glass half full, making lemonade out of lemons. I mean, I can tell you, like, I don't know how many times she told me that. So she was a great role model. She was a teacher and a guidance counselor. So she was really, we got along so well, and she was a great role model of somebody who had a great relationship with a man she loved and worked real hard, was very committed to what she did, and spent her career doing what she really enjoyed doing. And my parents retired young, and they moved away from Virginia to Florida. So the latter part, probably the last 20 years of their lives, my mom was 50 when she retired, and she was 70 when my dad died. So, and my dad was 72. So that just gives you a little picture of, you know, we were really close. We saw each other a lot when they lived in the same state as me, but when they moved, we didn't see each other as much. So that was sad for me because my kids were younger, like 2 and 5 when they moved, but they still got to know their grandparents pretty well. So we were lucky with that. So, he died in 2007, 15 years ago. And unfortunately, what happened is when he died, and maybe you can relate to a situation like this with your parents, is that when he died, I say she died. She's still here in human form, but she completely checked out. She disconnected from life. She didn't have any desire to do anything. I thought, oh my gosh, she could substitute teach, or she could be a volunteer at a school, or she could, I mean, just be involved in her grandchildren's activities. But she had no desire to do that. And in fact, I mean, this sounds really cruel and very, you know, not very caring, but this is how much she loved my father. That when he died, my sister and I got on a plane and flew down to Florida as soon as we heard, with my two daughters and my sister's two kids. So their grandkids, that was it. They had the two kids and the four grandkids. And they were all at that point, like adults, you know, by that point, they had lived. I am so happy for is my father lived to see all of his grandchildren graduate from college, which is really cool. So I think my daughter at the time my youngest had just graduated. So she was the youngest of the four grandkids. So anyways, we fly down there and my mom, we're sitting on the couch and she looked at my sister and I, and she said, "It would have been easier if one of you had died." And that was like, I was like, "What'd you say?" Like, I know maybe you'd think that, but you're saying that out loud, you know? So, but okay. You know, that is how hurt, how lost, how broken, how much my dad meant to her, and his passing devastated her. Absolutely devastated her. And pretty much from the moment he died, it was just a downward spiral. One thing that I will say is he did not, he hated doctors. I don't think he'd been to the doctor for years. He was relatively healthy looking, was not overweight, was very active, and he had a brain hemorrhage. He woke up one morning, he basically went to the bathroom, came back to the bedroom, and fell forward on the bed and died. And so very sudden. But he hadn't gone to the doctor, and he didn't want my mother to go to the doctor. And what we found out after and living far apart, we didn't know the day to day, like what was happening to her, but she was having hip issues and she needed to have her hips replaced. And so very quickly after his passing, we realized she needed to go in and have some hips replaced. And so over the course of about a year and a half after he died, she went through two hip surgeries. But my parents also loved to drink. They were very much social drinkers. One might say they were leaned a little bit towards being alcoholics, and maybe towards the end, they were a little bit of that, because I think they ate less and drank more towards the end. But they stayed in their place. It was like evening cocktails, and that they didn't hurt anyone. So anyways, so after, of course, my mother, and there is alcoholism in my mother's family. Her mother was an alcoholic. Her mother's mother was an alcoholic. So a lot of history of lots of alcohol and lots of bad behavior and dysfunctional relationships in her family, on her mother's side. So anyways, she started to drink a lot, or continued to drink a lot, or drink more than she was drinking. We didn't know how much she was drinking until she moved from Florida to Virginia and went and stayed in a Leisure World apartment. And then I started to see this, over drinking, like drinking a bottle of wine a day kind of thing. And what happened is she fell. She had a walker and she fell. And the doctor basically said it was like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. She essentially shattered her femur and all of the bones, shattered, like apparently that big bone shattered. And the doctor told me and my sister that she'd probably never walk again. And she has never walked again. So she's been wheelchair bound since this happened, which I'm going to say was like late 2008, early 2009, maybe that this happened. So we moved her from where she was in Virginia. In the meantime, I was about the time I was getting remarried, and I was relocating 2 hours south of where she was living at the time, where my sister was living. So I decided she would move to where I was living and we would put her in assisted living. So she has been in assisted living and basically going downhill ever since. Has never really wanted to do anything. Initially, you know, we would go out to lunch. We would do special occasions. She would come over for Thanksgiving and that sort of thing. In the past year, it has digressed to the point where hospice got involved about a year ago. When hospice gets involved, they actually the assisted living place contacted hospice, and then hospice contacted me, and they made the recommendation, because when they foresee somebody's not going to live for like more than a year, then they bring hospice in. And so my mom, and where my mom stands from her religious upbringing, she and my dad, because of what happened, I don't know if it's all because of what happened when I was a child with the family member who created a lot of dysfunction in the family, or if it was something that, you know, was in them all along and it just kind of like made it easier for them to kind of disregard religion. But basically my parents didn't really believe in anything. My dad, they call themselves atheists, but they didn't really believe. My dad was kind of the person that you got to prove it to me. You got to prove it to me. So if he didn't have any real firm, solid evidence of God, then, you know, his was like, well, it's not true. Or maybe one day I'll find out. But he basically didn't think there was anything after life. And that's what my mom thinks. And I remember after he died, I said to her, "Mom, do you think you'll ever see Dad again?" And she said, "No." Mm-mm. And so I thought that was really sad, because she thought that was it. And suddenly he was gone. Never had a conversation, just there 1 minute and gone the next. And so I think part of me thinks that she's clinging on, because right now she's incontinent. She doesn't. And when you're in hospice, they really don't, like, if there's anything that, like, I would take her to the dermatologist and she'd have some surgeries to get rid of some cancer spots and that sort of thing. But they basically don't do, you know, once they're hospice care, you know, you don't actively, you know, treat them for medical issues. So she's bedridden. She's incontinent. She doesn't get out of bed. She food gets brought to her, but she's basically at this point just drinking, like, ensure, and that's it, and lays in her dark bedroom all day, and people come in, change her diaper. She is, I will say, cognizant. She is, like, I can have a conversation with her and she understands everything I'm saying. She knows who I am. So she just doesn't really carry on a conversation. But part of the reason she doesn't carry on a conversation is because she's not really interested in a conversation. She's not really interested in my life and what I'm doing. She is just surviving. And I think it's because there's nothing. She's clinging on because she sees nothing after this life. And I think it's so sad that she believes that, because I think, from my perspective, that she is actually living in a living hell. She is what is, would most people would think would be a living hell, powerless to even function on, you know, like to even get up out of bed and go to the toilet, powerless to even, you know, brush her own teeth, powerless to do anything for herself, clip her fingernails, can't do any of that stuff. And so she'll have memories of things, but then sometimes her memories get a little backwards. So sometimes she won't answer questions completely correct. But then when I say, "Oh, Mom, remember?" And she's like, "Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah." So anyways, she has no idea what year it is. Doesn't even know what season it is, but, that's fairly normal, I think, with people like her. So we put her in hospice care about a year ago. And I think at that point, once I realized that I thought the end was near, but then nothing changed. Right. So I started thinking, I wonder what would happen if she were able to connect with Dad. I wonder if she could connect with him, if that would give her hope that there was an opportunity to be with him again. And maybe it would accelerate her death. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not trying to make my mom die. I'm just trying to have my mom have peace. I just want her to have peace and to not be in this place of what I really feel that she's in, a place of kind of on hold. She's in this place of, it's like when you look in her eyes, there's not peace. When you look in her eyes, there's more terror. There's more fear. There's more like misery. And so if she would find more peace in death, I'm okay with that. But I'm powerless at this point. I'm powerless to help her. I have tried to, do things, introduce her to things, and nothing has worked. And so, I thought, well, if I can find somebody to bring that connection. And it's so funny how, I'm a big believer that when we believe something and when we desire something, the universe finds a way to bring that to us. And that is what happened here. So when I thought about, like, my thoughts are kind of jumbled right now. So let me jump to, I found a medium, and how this medium came into my life was pretty incredible. I'll skip back to some thoughts I had about my father before I found the medium. I had these thoughts about my dad and what he would think. So I'll get back to that. And so this medium comes into my life through the Second Half Spark School. So I have the second half Spark School, and primarily she's different than most of my students, because most of my students are people who are very stuck in this place where they feel like they can't find a way out. They want something. They want a life that brings more spark. They want this fire to be lit within, but they can't find it on their own. They're unable to, whatever they're doing. Maybe they're not doing anything. Maybe they're just settling for the life they're living, or maybe they've tried things and for whatever reason, the things aren't working. They're just unable to be happier, to come from a place of more joy, to find more fulfillment. And so that most of my students come from that place. Gail wasn't someone who wasn't sparked, because she was finding a lot of spark in her medium work. And I think what Gail connected, Gail Johnson, is the medium. And I did an episode with her, in January. So I'll reference that in the show notes, because it's her backstory and it's pretty incredible. So I really want to share that with you. But what Gail, I think, ended up coming into the school for was because she wanted to do something like I was doing. So I had this group coaching program. I was really helping people transform their lives. And she wanted to do that too. Because in her situation as a medium, there's only so many hours in the day. There's only so many people that you can help in a day. And medium work takes a lot out of you energetically. And so she can't do back-to-back sessions. She can't do 8 sessions in a day. So she has to be very careful with, when these sessions happen. And so if she could create some kind of a group coaching program and teach people how to do some of what she does, use some tools that she's learned, and I don't think she does individual sessions for them, but people can sign up for individual sessions. But she does this group coaching program, and it's called Hope, and it's so amazing. And we talk about that in her episode, so I'll refer you there. So Gail and I began this relationship of where I was really her business coach, not so much her personal growth coach, but her business coach. And so we started to work together. She actually signed up for my coach's program, and she went through his training. And then once she finished with his training, she had access to that, but she wanted me to continue to coach her because, you know, you honestly can accelerate faster when you have like this one-on-one accountability, which she was very smart about. So we started working together, and she launched her group coaching program in the fall and helped a lot of people who needed help, people specifically who had lost loved ones. And right before Christmas, that they hadn't necessarily lost them right before Christmas, but Christmas holidays are a very difficult time when you've lost a loved one. And when you, those holidays come up, no matter how long they've been gone, it can bring a lot of sadness. And so she really wanted to have something for people before the holidays. And so she did that. And so we continue to work together. And I really didn't even know, because when you work in this kind of a situation, like as a business coach, you really don't talk about personal stuff. You talk about business stuff. And so our time was always very focused on, okay, what's your goal? You know, what's the next step? What are we doing? You know, and like making sure that she was on track and getting done what she needed to get done. So it wasn't until the very end of our sessions, she had purchased a package. So we got to the end and it was like, I had this big friggin' nudge, like this, like, it's like kicking me in the butt nudge, because I had been thinking about wanting this connection. I had been thinking about wanting to have a medium to connect my mother and my father, but I didn't have the person. And then Gail came into my life and I still didn't really know what she really did. And until I interviewed her on my podcast and she told me like how she realized she had this gift as a child and went into a lot of detail. And I seriously was like, I don't know if you, when you listen to the episode, you can like really hear my jaw drop, but it was really powerful for me. And I knew in that moment that I needed, she was going to do this. She was going to bring my father to my mother. And so I finally, when we finished our business coaching, I said to her, okay, Gail, now I'm going to hire you. And aren't I the luckiest person in the world to have such amazing students that, that we can work together in this kind of symbiotic kind of relationship way. And so she said, oh, sure. Yeah. Like we'll get together. And then like, okay, we end the call. And then I'm sitting there like, do I do this? What do I do? Oh my God. Just friggin' do it, Lori. Just friggin' do it. And I did. I made the appointment and it was last week. And let me tell you, it was such an incredible hour. And I can't even describe it, and I won't, because I don't think anybody will understand it the way I understood it and the way my mother understood it. All I can tell you is that at the end of the call, my mother looked at me after we had hung up. My mother looked at me and said the longest sentence she'd ever said to me in years. She looked at me and she said, that was wild. And I will tell you that the look in her eyes, the feeling that I could see in her face was finally one of peace. I got the gift that I wanted so badly for her. And the gift was that she now knows my father is still with her and that he hears her and that he is waiting for her and he will be there for her, that they will be together again and that they actually are together now. but that it's not over. And she now knows that. And it was so uncanny the way Gail actually captured my father. I could tell it was him from the minute we started, because the first thing she said is, "Oh, he's fussy. He's fussy. He's really fussing. He's really fussing." And when I think of my father, and this is where I'll go back to where my thoughts were jumbled, because I didn't want to, I thought it would help to have that background before I talked about how I felt after my dad died and dealing with my mother. So my sister has completely disconnected from anything to do with my mother. She doesn't help me. She doesn't call me. We don't have a great relationship. And so maybe she'll wish me and send me a birthday card once a year. And maybe a text message once a blue moon. I don't reciprocate either. But we just don't really have a close relationship. We're very different. And, so I've had to navigate this situation with my mom on my own, in terms of finances, in terms of, healthcare, in terms of just emotional dealing. It's just tough. I'm like on an island by myself. And I will tell you, Gail and I never talked about my mom and my dad. She doesn't know any of the story about my mom and my dad. Right before we had the appointment, she said, "What's your mom's first name? What's your dad's first name?" She didn't know how long they were married. She didn't even know that I was like, you know, I guess you can assume he was my real father, but very early on the call, I think she said something like, you know, "Is he your real father?" or something. It was like, "Oh yeah, yeah." She doesn't know. She didn't know anything about how long my mom had been in assisted living. She knew my mother was going to be in assisted living because I had told her I had to take the laptop to her place and make sure, you know, everything was connecting and all that. But she didn't know, like, she doesn't know anything about how bad off she is or how the decline, how my dad died. None of that. So in this whole process of after my dad died and dealing with my mother and her decline, I often would think about my father, and I was very close with my father. And I would often think, and I don't want to get upset, but I will probably get upset or probably tear up and start to sniffle a little bit. But I always thought about, what would my dad think? I should be doing more for my mother. My dad would want me to do more. My dad would be disappointed in me. So I always felt it wasn't so much like I was worried about my mom, because I knew my mom didn't care. I knew my mom, she really, you know, didn't care if I was there or not. You know, she didn't have any interest in what I was doing or what my kids were doing or what now her great-grandchildren are doing. But I thought about my dad, and I also thought, my dad would not be happy with what she did with her life. My dad would not be happy with the fact she checked out on us. I just knew because my dad, it was like that. My dad was in some ways stubborn and super funny, but also didn't put up with bullshit. Don't put up with your bullshit, right? And my mom was like, just checked out. And I can hear him now, "Diane, what are you doing?" I mean, I could just envision that. But I did feel guilty, a lot of guilt for not having done more, that there was just feeling like I could have done something to have changed the decline, to have changed the trajectory of her life. So when we first got on the phone or the Zoom call, it was a Zoom call. When we first got on the Zoom call with Gail, she said, "This is what happens." Cause I had no idea how this stuff goes down. It's for my first time. She said, "You know, I pray before I have a session, I pray to God and I ask for whoever wants to connect So she knew I wanted to connect my mom and my dad, but I guess sometimes the person you want to connect with doesn't actually show up, or other people show up. And in our case, that's what happened. It's kind of crazy. So she said, Diane, your mother is here and she wants to talk to you. And Lori, your dad, he wants your grandma to go first. He said he'll wait. So that was super interesting. And what was so interesting was that my grandmother apologized to my mother. And that was another thing that I thought was super interesting, because Gail had no idea about my grandmother and my mother's relationship, and that my grandmother's an alcoholic, and that they had, my mom had, I don't want to go into a lot of detail about that whole thing, because this episode's going to be 2 hours long, but just to say that they had tension in their relationship. As I had said earlier, my mom and my dad eloped. My grandparents did not like my father. They tried to get them split up. And there were some other things that happened. My grandfather was a general. My mother was the oldest of three. And they had actually had an older daughter who died in only about 2 days old. My grandmother was very sick. And so I think the baby was sickly. So there was a lot put on my mom. My mom was a straight A student. She did everything right. And, you know, fast forward, I think there's a lot expected out of a general's daughter. And then my grandmother is an alcoholic, so she didn't necessarily share her feelings. My mother and my father eloped, and there was quite a lot of family discord for quite some time. And so anyways, my grandmother wanted to apologize to my mother she said, I expected too much out of you, and I put a lot of pressure on you, and I'm sorry for that. And I want you to know how much I love you. I always loved you. And so it was just really powerful, because we weren't expecting her mom to show up. And it's funny, because there's no proof that this is actually happening, right? There's no proof that my grandmother's spirit's there conveying this information to Gail, who is conveying it to us. There's no proof. I have no proof. But what I can say is that she was right on with what my grandmother, and I think my grandmother, would say to my mother as her spirit, because once you're a spirit, you don't have that alcoholism mind anymore. You have your love. You're just present with love and kindness, right? And I know Gail. I know the person she is. I've been getting to know her for a year. And so she would never pull the wool over my eyes. It's not like going to some medium that I have no clue, some psychic on the side of the road. No, this is somebody that I genuinely know and I trust. So that made a big, huge difference as well. And then my dad wanted to interject. And my dad, as she said, he's fussy. He's being fussy. He's very fussy. And so he said, he wants to talk to you first, Lori. And that took me back, because it's funny, when I planned this, I had no desire to get something personally out of it. I only wanted to connect my mother and my father. I had no expectation of him talking to me. I don't know why that you would think I might have wanted to or thought that, but I didn't, because I was so focused on that connection with my mother. So he said, through Gail, said that he knew, and it was almost like she was a translator. Think of it as like somebody who is at a convention of people who speak Japanese, and you're the English speaking person. And so the person, the translator, is like listening to the person who's speaking Japanese and then going, okay. And then turning and saying, okay, this is what he said. And it was crazy, because he would interrupt her while she was telling us stuff, and she'd go, oh, wait. And then she'd go back to him. It literally crazy. So then he said, I just want to acknowledge how much I love you and how much I know this has been difficult for you. And, you know, I don't want to go into a lot of detail with what he said to me, because I'll just cry and I don't want to spend this episode crying, but it was so rewarding. I felt so acknowledged. I felt so understood by him. I felt like it's exactly what he would have said to me, knowing who he is. And it was a relief. It was a relief to know that he knew that I tried, that I did what I thought I could do. And so there was no reprimand. There was no, you know, wish you'd done this better. No, it was just an acknowledgement that I was there for her, and I was, did what I needed to do. And that was so, so beneficial to me. And maybe, you know, what I got the most personal value from, in the conversation. So anyways, he talked to my mother, and what is fascinating about his conversation, did you think when you connect people with their loved ones, it's like, you know, all good stuff. It's all like, I love you. And, you know, you're the best, and you are the best wife, and I miss you, and whatever, all that positive stuff. Right. But no, my dad was pissed. My dad was pissed at my mother, and he would be pissed at my mother. And Gail wouldn't have known that. And it started from the beginning of the call. And she said, ooh, he's fussy. He's being really fussy. And he told my mother that she was selfish, that she had, and actually Gail acknowledged that. Gail, when she was listening to my father before she told us what was coming through, she said, I know this might sound harsh, but he really wants you to know this. And he said, he wants you to know, Diane, that you hurt other people by checking out, by disconnecting, by not being, not living the life you should have lived. As I described earlier on, my mother was high energy, super positive. And what my father said to Gail was, you weren't your vibrant self. And vibrancy describes my mother to a T. So she wasn't her vibrant self, and he let her have it. But also how much he loved her and how much he missed her and how much he knew she missed him. And he also acknowledged the fact that he knew she was angry at him, and that she had been living so many of these years angry at him and not and letting herself stew, because she felt he deserted her. She felt she was abandoned. She felt, how could you have done this to me? You left me here alone. And he said all these things to her and acknowledged that. And that validated her. The same way that I felt acknowledged and validated in what he told me, I know my mother felt acknowledged and validated. And then it went into a lot of, I mean, this was an hour session. So he talked about his death. He had a very sudden death. He described how sudden it was. Gail had no idea how he died. He described what happened to him after he died. He described the experience very vividly. He described who was there when he was received, and how it was a surprise to him. He talked about how much they love to travel. He even, it's funny because he said, you know, I'm there because you talk to me. And she said no, but like I said, oftentimes she'll say no when she means yes. And so she won't always get it right. And I'm not in her head, so I don't know what she believes and what she doesn't believe. But at one point Gail laughed and she said, he says you're lying because you do talk to me, and I have shown myself to you And I think, you know, I'm there, but you're not acknowledging that, you know, I was there. So anyways, it was quite funny. It was quite funny that he challenged her, and then acknowledged, both he and Gail acknowledged, I don't know who was speaking towards the end where, but acknowledged that she had, her energy had changed, that she had very dark energy when we started the call, and her energy was super light at the end of the call. And that's what I meant by her face just changed. Her face had almost life in it. It was like, her face has always been about like death's door. And then after the call, it was like she was tapped with a wand or something. Is so, that's how I could describe it and how amazing it was for me. And so in my notes, I don't know what else. This was really crazy. Oh, I had put this in my notes. It's worth mentioning, because you know, I talk about how the universe sends us hints, the universe sends us messages, the universe sends, you know, nudges, all these things I talk about all the time. So on the way to the appointment, her place is 10 to 15 minutes from where I live. So, and there was no traffic. So I got there in like less than 10 minutes. And so like, I was about halfway there and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to listen to a song on the radio. I want to just put, you know, I like music. Music always puts me in a good spirit. And most of the songs that are on my playlist are upbeat, fun. And I can always fast forward, right? I can always shuffle to the next song. So I access, and I never access. It's so funny. And when I get in my car, I have XM Sirius. And so I usually play like Coffee House or Blend, or, you know, if my husband's in the car, the Highway Station. But for whatever reason, this day, I decided to play my iTunes library, something in my iTunes library. And the only time I really ever listen to my iTunes library is if I used to listen to it when I would jog, because for the beats to help me with my pace, or sometimes when I'm walking or I'll go on a walk. Lately, I've been doing a lot of audiobooks. So I really haven't been listening to my iTunes playlist much at all. I think it's called Apple Music now. But for whatever reason, I decided, oh, I'm just going to put on my iTunes library. And so I clicked on it, and I always do shuffle because I always like whatever song comes up. So I clicked on it. I looked and I was like, I'm only going to probably be able to listen to one song. Like, I'll be there in 4 minutes. I'm probably only going to be able to listen to one song. Guess what song came on my iTunes? And let me tell you, I have not heard this song the last several times I've listened to my iTunes. Say in the past year, when I've gone out on walks and happened to choose my Apple iTunes, I don't recall this song being played. So the song was "She Talks to Angels." Is that not really eerie, crazy? cue creepy music again. Seriously, "She Talks to Angels" was the song that came on my iTunes when I shuffled. Now, if that isn't a universal hint, nudge, sign. So I pulled into the parking lot. I was a little shocked that was on. And I pulled into the parking lot and it finished playing while I was sitting in the parking lot. And I actually pushed play on my video when it was over, just to say, you won't believe what I just heard playing on the radio. But I really couldn't say anything. I didn't post that video anywhere because I didn't want to say until I did this episode that I was connecting with my dead father. So anyways, I don't know if it was meant that Gail talked to angels or that my mom was about to talk to an angel. I don't know what that was supposed to mean, but it meant someone was about to talk to an angel. So that was pretty crazy. So that was in my notes and I didn't want to miss that. But yeah, so that was my experience. That is as much detail as I can provide because, you know, like I said, you wouldn't understand a lot of the details, or it's just something that means something to me and means something to my mother, but, you know, wouldn't mean something to somebody else. But, you know, I wrote Gail a long email afterwards about how amazing the experience was. I literally think that it changed the trajectory of my mom's life in terms of however much longer she's going to live. It will be with more peace, and how amazing that you can do that for somebody, based on some gift that you have innately and that you were born with. And if you listen to Gail's episode, you'll hear how that kind of, when she first was 5 years old or so, and that kind of manifested into her life, and she realized, and then proceeded to think that the devil was in her. It's kind of crazy. But it is amazing. You should reach out to Gail if you have a desire to connect with somebody that you've lost that you love. She comes highly recommended from me. And I know that she has clients that refer her, and that she has clients that keep coming back to her. I know that I'm not the only one who thinks she's amazing. But literally I had this desire. I had this nudge. I had this inkling, and I sat on it for a long time, but I never stopped thinking about it. And I truly believe that continuing to think about it and continuing to desire it brought Gail into my life and led me, even though at the time she was brought into my life, I didn't put two and two together, but it led me to take the steps to eventually uncover and what she does unfold, and me realize that she could do exactly that for me. That thing that I wanted to do, she could do for me. And I finally stopped thinking about it and just friggin' did it. And it was, as I say, unfriggin' believable. So if you're still with me, thank you so much for listening to this story and bearing with me as I got teary-eyed and choked up and kind of reliving that experience. But hopefully you got something out of this episode, and if it's a connection to you and a loved one, ultimately that happens, please reach out and let me know, because I'd love to hear about it. All right, that's it. Until next month, what do you think I am just going to freaking do? Won't be talking to another dead person, because I already did that. It'll be something new and different. All right, bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.